This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
It's a pleasure to be here. I've been asked to talk about how engagement fits into a time of tough choices. I mean, these are really quite interesting times, I think. We've got the first coalition government since the Second World War, the first hung parliament since the 70s, the biggest cuts in sort of memory. I mean, who would agree that these are interesting times? Who wouldn't agree? Who won't put their hand up regardless of what I say? Okay, now that we've all had a stretch. The second question is, who knows that may you live in interesting times is a Chinese curse? Who knows that that is actually a lie? They've never found a Chinese saying, may you live in interesting times as a curse, yet we still use it because it's a great saying, and actually it's true, even though it's false, paradoxically. In the 30s, when they started using it, it was very interesting times, and it did feel like a curse. And I think a lot of people can sympathise with that view, even if reality sadly got in the way of that particular story. And here I am perpetuating it. Anyway, so we're going to talk about the interesting times we live in and how public engagement can fit into both a local strategic partnership and also more broadly in the public sector and in civil society. The three core messages I've got, the first is that the unprecedented challenges we face mean that business as usual is not an option. The second point is that I believe that engagement is one of the most important tools at the disposal of local strategic partnerships to move forward, but also that the engagement that we do needs to change in response to the changing nature of the challenges that we face. And to top it up, I've got three things at the end that I think that local strategic partnerships should start thinking about doing in response to what I'm going to outline. Those of you who don't know who I am, I'm, as mentioned, the Deputy Director of Involve. We're a charity. We specialise in public engagement, so both in terms of evaluating and researching it, doing it in partnership with others, and also supporting and training others to do it well. And I built a website called peopleandparticipation.net, plug warning here, but it's free, and it's got lots of methods and case studies, and it's a good place to go for interesting advice and support. At the moment, partnerships seem to be the big thing. We've got coalition government, we've got a new politics, a politics built around collaboration, not conflict. We've also got the big society, the idea that partnership is actually being expanded. It's no longer you have the right to sit at the table, you have the right to take part in meetings and be informed. Actually, you'll now have the right to actually run a service if you're unhappy with how it's... You've got a right to bid for service contracts. So it seems like the whole rhetoric is very much around we want to move this whole arena forward. Partnership is key. That's what's coming out. On the other hand, let's be realistic. We've got some big cuts coming. Spot the unlikely headline. So, public outrage at schools cuts, or 1,000 signs petition to save hospital, or outcry at council axes consultation budget. It is an easy target for the cuts. But, in the same way that Dr. Guillotine perhaps regretted his invention when he himself was imprisoned and threatened with execution, I think in the longer term, actually, if we do a whole-scale cutback of engagement, I think we will regret it because we're not counting the costs of not engaging and we're not counting the long-term benefits that we gain through doing it. The unprecedented challenges that we face, I'm going to go through this quite quickly because I think the previous two speakers did an excellent job of summarising where we're at. So you've got the swinging cuts. You know, some people I've been speaking to are talking about 40, 50% this year, and that's obviously a massive deal for them. But if you thought that all you needed to do was hunker down for 4 years and then you could get back to business as usual, I'm afraid it's not that simple because these are just the beginning of the transition that we're in. We've got massive changes. We're going through a massive period of turbulence. We've got geographical changes. In a way, we're living through a period which is almost a reversal of the process which started with sort of 1492 with the European domination of the world. Actually, we're seeing much more power going to Asia. We're seeing the growth of those economies. In 2020, the Chinese middle class will be almost twice as big as the entire population of Europe. There's massive changes on the horizon. That's going to put a lot of stress on how we do things. We've got a demographic transition. One out of four young people, it's projected, who are born today are going to live to be 100. I think we should tell them right now not to expect a telegram from Buckingham Palace. That's going to have a massive impact. You know, if that's the case, can we still have, you know, what will the retirement age be like? And then, of course, you've got the socioeconomic changes. We've been living a nation of borrowers and consumers, and actually perhaps we need to refocus into being more about producing. We've also got the automation and outsourcing. There's lots of challenges, and I haven't even mentioned climate change. All of these things mean, even after these budget cuts, we are still facing big challenges. We're going to have to change how we do things, and I believe engagement is a core part of that. It's also a golden opportunity for local strategic partnerships. You're well placed because you've got a local focus. You can make sense of the locality and look at it as a holistic thing. You can tap into and bring out local resources in a way that that big central institutions can't do. You can coordinate activities and also find efficiencies much easier than anything from the top down. So I'm really happy with the message coming out of CLG around these things. But the question is, of course, will LSPs take it up? And in all honesty, we know that some are very successful, some are very good at engaging, and others have a long way to go. So we'll talk a little bit about some of the things that both the good ones and the bad ones can do. I mean, interestingly, the studies that exist around theory of change seem to show that the rich get richer in terms of partnerships. If you have a history of good engagement, of good relations, then those partnerships tend to develop and grow. And if you've got the opposite, you get into a vicious circle where it actually gets harder and harder. We'll talk about how to get out of the vicious cycle into the virtuous one further on. I think engagement is key, absolutely central to the future of local strategic partnerships and public sector organisations as a whole. I think there are a number of challenges here, because one of them is that a lot of people think, well, engagement, that's for good times. Yeah, we've got some extra money, how would you like us to spend it? But tough times, a lot of people go into this, the tough leader. We stand up tall, and we stop listening and we start leading. But I think that's exactly the wrong approach, because, and let me give you a little bit of historical analogy for why I think things have changed. So it's a tale of three wars. The First World War is the quintessential example of where the public trusted and deferred to their leaders. They marched off to a war. They weren't quite sure what was going on. But actually, in the end, they trusted people to make those decisions. There were tough choices, but people got down to it. I mean, the casualty figures from the First World War just stagger belief compared to what we've got now. Vietnam War, often seen as an example of, you know, the public being very anti-a war, but it took 10 years of warfare before the public acted. Iraq, we had millions of people going out into the street before the first shot had been fired. So clearly, people's perception of what it means to trust someone, has changed. If we think that we can make the tough choices and implement cuts in the way that we could in the 30s, I think we've got another thing coming. The public are much more articulate, much less deferential, and Britain could easily become quite ungovernable unless we bring people along the journey. So I think engagement gives you a number of things. My experience is, if you share the question, the tough choices you've got with citizens, with members of the public, with stakeholder organisations, as adults, you say, these are the tough choices we have to make. There's no clear answer. Help us. They will rise to the occasion. If you try and keep in the dark or treat them like children, they will react accordingly. The first thing it gives is better decisions. So it gives you better information about the things you wanted to know about. And there's lots of studies on, say, service redesign or personalization, which shows that if you let service users decide what gets spent, you might get very quickly 10%, 20% efficiencies because they decide what they really need and they know which services they're not using. You've also got the unexpected insights, the things you didn't know you needed to know, which, for example, we did a process in Jersey on immigration, on the ageing society, and immigration is a big issue. What came out was actually, when you started to dig deeper, it wasn't the immigration which was the massive issue. It was actually things like greenfields and buildings and planning. Those were actually the real issues which underlay that, and that helped the politicians make sensible decisions. And then, of course, it improves implementation. So Leicestershire County Council did some work with Ipsos Mori where they asked citizens to look at the various budget items and say, well, which ones would you cut? Before they had the discussion, I think they had 23 budget items, and the citizens were only willing to contemplate two of them, for cuts, and they thought everything could be done by saving inefficiencies. After discussing it and really understanding the issues, they were willing to contemplate cuts in 10 of the 23 areas. So that's a massive change. If you open up and explain to people that these are the tough choices, they will rise to the occasion, and it becomes much easier to implement these things because people have an appreciation of the tough situation we're in. The recession might even be a good thing. And the reason for that is, I'm not going to ask you anyone to raise their hand because it's a difficult question to answer, but I'm guessing a lot of you know that partners in your LSP are doing the same thing. The police has a community panel, citizens panel. The local authority has a citizens panel. The PCT has a citizens panel. Or in some cases, I've been to LSP areas where the police have held packed meetings for empty houses several times. They've done sort of consistently. So there's lots of inefficiencies. We're going through the motions. We're doing engagement as we've been doing it for the past 10 years. And it's not really giving results. I think Andrew mentioned the 80-20 rule. And I actually think a lot of the engagement we're doing, a lot of the results we're getting is coming from a smallish proportion of the engagement that we're doing really well. So if the recession forces us to actually start collaborating for us to run one citizens panel well as opposed to four badly, then that is a good development. So so clearly engagement does need to change. I'm not going to go into too much on this, but this is an interesting graph. The red line is the number of times politicians have mentioned the words public engagement in Parliament. So we've seen a tenfold increase of the past decade. And the blue line is the number of people who feel they can influence decisions. And it's actually lower than 2001. Now, I'm not much of an investor, as my bank account will testify, but that's not the rate of return I would expect. So clearly, we're not getting the return we want from engagement. And I think that's largely because when it comes down to it, I'd say 80% of what we do tends to be a written consultation or public meetings. We go down the same routes. And the problems that we are facing have changed. This is a recent publication, Talking for Change. Sorry about the bad resolution. If you want a closer look, I've got some copies with me, where we looked at how problems have changed. In the past, the problems that we faced were ones like public health, cholera. Cholera is a disease which is very easy to deal with in a centralised way. You shut down a pump, you implement public sanitation, and it solves itself. Obesity is much more complex. We're moving from problems which are small-scale, easy-to-overview stakeholder group, and ones which are very amenable to government action, to problems which are hugely complex, long-term, and ones which are where government actually needs to collaborate with people. Obesity. We can't actually force people to exercise. We actually have to get them to do it themselves and change their eating habits. And so actually we need to change how we engage people to deal with new and difficult problems. So the new solutions, I think there are three things which local strategic partnerships could do better in terms of embracing things. And this is a great quote, I think, for showing why the old ways aren't working. So, people need to come to us to tell us what's wrong, or should we actually be going out to them in their space? This is from a 2006 JRF publication. So I think future engagement will need to be deliberative. And there was a really interesting recent American example called Our Budget, Our Economy, which had 60 meetings across America where people met at tables, looked at the evidence, and really debated what spending they wanted to happen at the federal level. And I think that deliberation, the considered views, are so important, because if we just get snapshot surveys, most people will say, just cut the senior manager's wages and we'll be fine. I think digital needs to be enhanced. I mean, we can't just do digital, but the spending challenge is an interesting idea, and it also allows people to contribute who wouldn't have been able to otherwise, and it allows the amalgamation of thousands of ideas. And we've got this distributed. I think we need to start going out to people, and we need to start allowing others to engage with us. In Estonia, they got 50,000 citizens to help the government clean up the country. The citizens logged onto a Google Maps site, and identified where there was rubbish, and they then self-organized in a similar way to the Obama campaign. So we can actually harness the energy of people if we let them. But you can't do that in a centralized, overly controlled system of engagement. So we need to relax control a bit in order to actually have an impact. So, that's what I think future engagement should look like. So you may well ask at this point, well, Edward, what do we actually do? Well, that's a fair question. So I think there are three things that I would suggest that public sector bodies and local strategic partnerships should do at this time. The first is to do a review or audit, to take some time out to think, where are we now? What are the challenges that we face in this locality? What are our strengths and weaknesses? And identify, is the organization fit for purpose? Is this a good functioning partnership? If so, where are its weaknesses? Is it not a good functioning partnership? If so, how can we make it so? The second thing is actually to articulate and build the business case for engagement. Because I think engagement is critical, but it's also, let's face it, there are a lot of people out there who think it's a waste of money. And if the bits that work are going to survive the spending cuts, we're going to have to articulate that. And the third thing is be smarter in the delivery of this thing. So in terms of the review, I think it's important that we understand where you're at, where you want to be, strengths and weaknesses. And there are a number of tools for doing this. We're currently developing one with the National Coordinating Centre for Public Engagement in Higher Education, which looks at 9 focal points for successful organisations. So what is it that distinguishes an organisation which manages to embed engagement and make it part and parcel of what you do, and those that don't? And so that's due out, the final product's due out in December, but you know, really happy to talk to people about that as we're developing it. These are the 9 areas. There's also the Departmental Dialogue Index, which our board member Lindsay Colwell developed for ScienceWise, which is an excellent tool. Who's done Myers-Briggs? This is Myers-Briggs, but for your organization. So you can look at, is your partnership extroverted or introverted? And that's really useful information if you're trying to change your partnership, so you can apply the right language and do the right interventions which fit with the organizational culture. And I think that organizational shift is really crucial. Second bit is building the business case. We need to start articulating the long-term benefits. We need to start articulating the costs of not engaging, because those are very rarely out there. And we're currently developing some work with some guidance with Consumer Focus on how practically you might do that. That's out in September. If you can't wait, I know that the Community Development Foundation and the Network of Empowering Authorities have also produced guidance along similar lines. And finally, we need to be smarter in how we deliver this stuff. So we need to do less, but do it better. So identify the bits that all the partners are doing that are doing well, and then collaborate around those. I think, dare I say this, I might regret it later, but use less consultants. Skill up your own staff. Do it in-house. And skilling up staff doesn't necessarily mean spending on expensive training courses. Find the people in-house who already know how to do this, and get them to mentor others and build up support networks. And this slightly contradicts this idea about doing more in-house, but actually, don't be afraid to outsource to civil society organizations. I've seen a lot of cases where public sector bodies have said, oh, I need to engage with people with disabilities, disabled people, and then they go out and try and set up a new network when there are perfectly good ways of reaching them through some of the partners. They just haven't asked. So I think we need to move more towards a focus on relationships, because a lot of the time when we're engaging in the past, we've been strip mining our residents for information. We've developed a really good sense of what they want, but the constant stream of identical surveys has really tested people's patience. And I really ask the question, what good is excellent data on your residents if they hate you as a result of gathering it? So we really need to focus more on relationships, and the data will follow from that. And I promised you another fake Chinese quote, and here it is. So Kennedy actually said this. So when written in Chinese, the word for crisis is composed of 2 characters. One represents danger, and the other represents opportunity. Now, that's not strictly true in terms of the Chinese characters, but it's still, much like we live in interesting times, it tells us something real about crises. And I hope that by outlining the challenges we face and why business as usual isn't an option, why engagement is central, and how engagement has to change to fit with these new challenges, I hope that I will have helped you to perhaps move from seeing the interesting times as a curse into a blessing. So thank you all very much. Thanks to the people who've let me use their pictures. There are my contact details, and I really look forward to your questions, which I presume now are going to be over break.
No.
Fantastic.
Thank you.